Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys just a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Did you do your homework, Adam?
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is that moment all over again. I've sat down in my uncomfortable plastic desk.
Yeah.
The teacher has come in. The bell has rung. Everyone's taking out their folders.
You had an entire week to prepare.
Oh, no. And all that's going through my head is how I can fake my way through this. So I can sound like a smart and knowledgeable person. I think the way to do that, Ben, is to ask you if you did yours and to see what your findings were.
My answer is that I did not do my homework in a formal way. I did not write anything down.
Maybe you should tell the viewers at home and the student sitting next to you just what exactly the homework assignment was.
I asked the question in that way because you kind of reacted badly to my suggesting that we think ahead about something for our show.
I react badly to most suggestions of any kind. It's sort of a terrible thing about me.
I think people would be surprised to know how true that is.
It feels better to have it confirmed.
We talked at the end of the last episode, we are now on the precipice of completing the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets, for a second time. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the first one, we went back and kind of we tweaked for our second playthrough. But we were talking at the end of the last episode about the idea of making further tweaks. You know, this doesn't have to be a formal homework situation. You weren't asked to like type it up on single space paper with 1-inch margins, Adam.
Oh, I can give an oral presentation.
This is an oral presentation situation.
That's where I succeed.
Yeah.
It's the thing I'm best at.
You love oral.
I don't have to know anything about anything.
Yeah. I also, a friend of DeSoto actually gave us some notes on Twitter this morning. I don't know if you saw this, but...
I think I muted this person after the third.
I think there's a couple of exciting ideas here. A couple that I reject out of hand, like some weird ones, like one where we have to find a Previa and record the next episode inside of it. I'm not really sure what that would add to an episode, but...
Nothing at all.
It just work on our behalf and then, like, worse sound.
Rejected.
Get that stuff out of here!
There's one, His Eyes Uncovered, where we would have to pre-write 10 Temerian metaphors to describe... things that we might discuss during the episode.
Which
I kind of like the idea of it. It's a bit like what we chose to do with our Nth Degree episode recently, which, you know, I think the fact that we decided to use that as a comedy opportunity really did not work for people that don't listen to this show for comedy.
I don't know who those people are.
I know. We don't have anything to offer other than that. And we barely have that.
Right. What are some of the others? Roll them down.
Let's see. Geeking Out must find an actor who appeared in the episode and convince them to guest co-host the show.
Nope.
No good!
We don't have guests.
We don't have guests. I would have on like a main cast character for an interview the way we did with LeVar Burton.
Sure.
The issue is I don't know if we would be able to make something like that happen in time to record an episode in order to get it out in time. So I think we have to reject that just from like a functionality standpoint.
Yeah, I think that breaks the show.
Yeah. Tape it to the fridge. We each have to draw a picture that reflects this week's episode. Must put the picture up on the internet, and the Friends of DeSoto can vote on who has the better arts and crafts skills.
I love that idea if it weren't just a picture, if it were pure arts and crafts. Like, I love the idea of going to my mailbox and having opened a package where Ben has sent me a paper plate with a bunch of macaroni glued to it.
Yeah, a shoebox with a diorama of a scene inside of it.
Yeah, I would say that's a candidate.
I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Kanar with Damar. We must each attempt to replicate Kanar, the Cardassian alcoholic beverage. Each must drink the other's creation through the episode. So it's a bit of a let's drink aboutification of The Greatest Generation.
I like
where
that.
It's inflicting a cocktail on the other person.
As long as it's not like a punishment cocktail, like that fucking hot dog cocktail.
I think I could commit to being to not punishing you.
Like your best effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel like, well, I don't know if we've ever actually hit a traveler or a banger square. I feel like they maybe are taking up too many spaces right now. So maybe we replace one of those with a Kanar with Damar.
I think that could work.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple others that are like review an episode of Voyager or Enterprise, which I don't think... We're not in the business of burning episodes that we might need in the future.
Get that out of here!
Agreed. And I think that qualifies as breaking the show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do anything that gets us out of our lane.
Well, what do you think about adding a Kanar with Damar and his eyes uncovered square to this board game? Maybe one more Coco No-No?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm into it. Let's do it.
Okay, so we'll add another Coco No-No in place of one of the existing Quarks bars. We've got the one where we have to do Temerian metaphors, the one where we have to make art and send it to each other, and the one where we have to invent Kanar cocktails for each other.
We should call the square where we're making arts and crafts.
Mm-hmm.
We should call that the Jay Gordon Square. That guy's probably great at arts and crafts.
Yeah, we got to get Felipe and Craig on the tweak. So hopefully by the time the next episode airs, when people go to gach.biz/game, we will have those tweaks done.
And if I had any expectations at all of the speed with which we do things,
yeah,
I can just about guarantee that that'll happen.
All right. Well, speaking of getting to the battle bridge, do you want to get into the episode?
Oh, we got to do that, Ben. It's a kind of Deep Space Nine episode. It is Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 9. Our man, Bashir.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Episode that strains credulity when you consider Garrick's quality as a tailor and his preference for the shawl collar tuxedo, Ben.
Yeah.
You rock a shawl collar, don't you?
I think shawl collar is the most traditional single-breasted tuxedo collar.
Yeah.
Like a notch collar. I have a shawl collar white tuxedo jacket and a notch collar black tuxedo jacket. The notch collar on a tuxedo, I think if I was in the market for a tuxedo today, I would not buy a notch collar tuxedo.
Interesting.
I think it makes it look a bit like a black business suit. I also probably would not buy a black tuxedo today. I would go midnight blue.
Whoa. Wow, I'm getting all kinds of tips from you today. I was in a department store not long ago, and I had a velvet tuxedo jacket in my hand.
Wow.
It would have been fun, but I just don't have an occasion for things like that.
I have it because I want to have occasions. I want to be invited to black tie things or show up to things that should be black tie in black tie.
That's what I love about you. You are an aspirational tuxedo.
I want to live it up.
That's a great way to be.
Yeah, I was listening. Do you ever listen to the John Gabris podcast, High and Mighty?
Always, every week.
I love that show, and he had a guy on recently. I mean, like, I think like every 3 weeks he has somebody on to talk about Las Vegas, and maybe about as often somebody on to talk about Long Island. But
the Vegas episodes are my favorite. Do you just skip those? Do you?
It's like watching a documentary about like sport fishing or something. Yeah. It's like, I'm not interested in sport fishing, but a good documentary about any subject will be compelling just to like see people that are like really into it or whatever.
Great point.
And one of the recent Vegas episodes, somebody made the suggestion that like one, like if you go to Vegas, you're there for 3 nights or whatever, one of the nights you should just like dress up to the nines and go fucking crazy. And
yeah.
I really love that idea.
That's a good idea.
It's just that
are you
like
proposing that for Star Trek Las Vegas?
Oh yeah, fucking A.
The fuck of it is, Ben, it's just, it's in August.
Yeah.
That
I wore a tuxedo to a beach wedding in Costa Rica this year, so I know that feel.
It's gonna be a wet tuxedo before too long.
Yeah. Anyways, this episode begins with some defenestration. Man goes through a window, and Bashir is the man who has thrown that person through the window. He's going to celebrate the defenestration with a babe in a red dress. They're going to drink a little champagne. But this guy gets up, and Bashir is only able to knock him back down by firing a champagne cork at his forehead. Here's a little tip to the people listening. Very good luck if you get hit by a champagne cork to go have a glass of champagne with who hit you with it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. That like if you're at like a New Year's Eve party and somebody pops a bottle and you catch the cork, luck obliges you to go share a glass with that person.
Hmm.
This guy does not get that opportunity because it knocks him out cold. Very unrealistic.
They're going to have to go get that drink once he comes to.
There must be like a lead weight in that cork if it knocked him out.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of James Bond comparisons in this episode. But like, is it one of those things where a guy throws his shoe and the shoe ends up having a bunch of razor blades in it? Like, is it loaded up?
Yeah, it's like one of those bowler hats that's deadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is Bashir getting his jollies off. And when you're getting your jollies off, you don't want to be interrupted. You don't want somebody to let themselves into the room, you know?
Get out. But doctor, I've only just arrived.
This is your private time. You don't want any creeping.
Yeah, and it is Garrick who is looking at Bashir during here. And Bashir takes great umbrage with this.
He takes legal and privacy angled umbrage with it, which I think is great.
Yeah.
Breaking into a holosuite during someone's program is not only rude, it's illegal.
It gives us a little bit more of the legalese involved in these circumstances that I think we've wanted for a while.
I wonder if this is like a Bajoran rule that it's illegal, or if it's like if everywhere it's illegal.
Right.
Because it doesn't seem to be illegal on the Enterprise, right?
Yeah. I wonder if it's like an international waters thing. Like, where suddenly, if the station were in a part of the quadrant that weren't zoned a certain way, I wonder if it would be more permissive for Garrick to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, anyways, the conversation between them kind of winds up boring this red dress lady. It's a weird period, right? Because this is probably right around when Pierce Brosnan became James Bond, and James Bond films like started to feel kind of self-parodic in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I would have picked up on the satire like during the, like when this episode aired originally, but it really does kind of dunk pretty heavily on some of the tropes of James Bond.
It made me think a lot about my own video game playing. Like, when I saw this, I was like, who would want their gameplay to be this cheesy? And then I think about what I like to do in Jazz Horse, And a lot of that game is super cheesy, too.
Yeah, a lot of tying maidens to the tracks and...
Yeah, so I get it.
Yeah.
And like Bashir, I wouldn't like anyone to watch me play that either, which is why I do it in public on my Twitch stream at twitch.com/cutfortime.
I do the same thing when I'm browsing various porn websites.
Does Bashir live in Chris Brenner's apartment?
You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
Yeah, I was wondering if this was a reused playset. I also got kind of like Move Along Home vibes from the set that it opens in, the like purpley rooms.
Yeah.
And I don't know if, I mean, I don't know why they would reused anything from Move Along Home.
Yeah.
Probably just burn everything after they finish shooting it.
There was nothing to learn from that experience. There is no spiky bird to introduce later on.
To reuse as a prop.
Yeah.
So we get the sense that Garrick is gonna join along for a while, and that this is a program that Bashir has recently gotten his hands on and is really just kind of throwing all of his free time into. Kind of the way Jazz Horse felt in October, you know?
Yeah.
So we meet Mona Loves It.
Come again.
Mona Loves It.
I'm sorry, I'm just not getting it.
Mona Loves It.
Never mind.
The super busty personal valet of Julian Bashir, international spy. And he spends a lot of time bond-splaining what's going on to Garrick, which I felt was kind of a bad use of time in this episode. I understand why Garrick would need a Cliff's Notes of the Cold War and playing at being James Bond, but we, the audience, for sure do not, and they really run it down, you know?
Right. I wish I got a little bit more about why Bashir loves this so much. I mean, the inference here from the presence of Mona Loves It is that Bashir is using this program to fuck a lot.
Right, right.
And I wish he said anything that disabused us of that idea, you know?
Or leaned into it, right?
Right.
Like, Derek, I don't want you here because I, like, get naked and do the nasty in this, you know? It's like this.
Right.
There's not a lot of depictions of masturbation in popular media that don't make it seem like something that a pathetic loser does,
uh-huh.
You know? Like, masturbation as shorthand for pathetic loser is, like, a very well-known trope in films and television.
Sure.
But, like, basically everybody masturbates. Very few people don't at all. And like you don't need to defend having private time to take care of yourself in real life, right?
No, exactly. And I think Garrick should know that the longer that Bashir is off the street, the better for everyone else on the station.
Yeah, like this would have been like an interesting opportunity for Star Trek to kind of stake out a more enlightened place. Like, Garrick, I crank off in here and I don't want you to join me.
Think of the viewership of this show that would feel so seen in that moment.
Yeah. Finally, something that's about me.
This is my Star Trek right here.
Anyways, this is all happening with concurrently with a Winnebago full of tired officers coming back from a conference. And boy, could I identify with the idea of being tired and coming back from a faraway conference, Adam.
I've got a ship full of tired officers here. I think we'll all be happy to be in our own beds tonight.
Yeah, which one of these guys gets the middle seat is my question.
I don't know.
Are all seats on a runabout good?
Yeah, they all have like captain's chairs on the runabout.
That's what
and
you want.
Captain's chairs in the like minivan sense, not in the Star Trek sense.
Yeah.
I know that there's bunks in the back of the runabout. Never see the runabout's back in Deep Space Nine.
No. There's that one TNG ep where Picard grew super long fingernails touching that fruit basket, but that was it.
Maybe they burned that set too. They were like, that was gross. Let's never go back there again.
Yeah, you never see the fingernail prosthetic from that episode making the rounds in the museum tour.
Never goes up on eBay.
Yeah.
Screen-used fingernails.
Screen-used fingernails and rotten fruit bowl set. Opening bid, $3. No reserve.
Golden carton.
The cut.
Golden carton.
So.
They are on their way back from a conference. Everybody's wiped out. The ship has been has had wooden shoes thrown into the works.
Hence the word sabotage.
And the warp core starts to have a runaway cascade failure of some kind.
It's Eddington's chance, Ben.
Yeah,
it's Eddington. Chance.
Eddington has been left with his hand on the levers of power, while the entire senior staff of the station went to some conference, which we don't even need to say it out loud. That is bad math in this universe. but Eddington.
Why not give us an entire episode before this episode that's just Eddington house sitting Deep Space Nine?
The Data's day of Eddington being in charge of the station.
Yeah.
Would have been nice. Missed opportunity. But he thinks very quickly. He and Odo are kind of like scrambling around in ops, trying to figure out what to do. They get everybody beamed off of the Orinoco, but the Orinoco goes boom. Very unfortunately, this is one of the Starship explosions where the people don't materialize on the transporter pad an instant after we see the ship explode in space. We get a puff of smoke instead.
It's not a wet red smoke either.
No, which is good, you know.
Yeah.
Wet red smoke would be worst case scenario. But yeah, they've got to act fast because the transporter pattern buffer is not a long-term storage medium. And they're going to lose the patterns if they don't find a place to put them.
Yeah, they basically Scotty Dyson sphere everyone's pattern.
Yeah, that's a great call.
But they need to act fast because each person contains a finite amount of data, and there's only so much room in the station's computer, so they need to get with the deleting, and fast.
Yeah, they basically reset the station to factory settings in order to have enough space to do this, and they shunt everything that's in the pattern buffer into the station's computer.
The patterns are gone. Did the computer save them in time?
I think so, but I'm not sure where.
The idea that they don't know if they saved the data, and having more data than they have space for, is a real computer that John uses to record friendly fire situation.
Yeah, seriously. And it's interesting to see Eddington like just sweating bullets still, like when, you know, that seems like it should, that fix seems like it should give us some space to breathe, and it really doesn't.
And for as much of a rat fuck as Eddington has been up until now, like, when he's given command, he is not relishing this moment.
No, he takes it really seriously, and I think how in over his head he feels is something that I could really sympathize with, you know? Eddington has not been made sympathetic in this way that many times, and I thought this was an interesting way of doing it. Because it doesn't make you like him, it just makes you, like,
right,
feel his pain, you know?
There's a pace to the question and answer portion of this episode that really accelerates this moment, because right at about the time that Eddington is like, okay, where's their pattern? We go back into Bashir's Jack Shack and the Navisator is there in an evening gown.
Well, this wasn't my idea.
She is doing a much better fake accent than the lady in that first scene.
Colonel Anastasia Komonenov, KGP.
Ops communicates with Bashir and overhears, like, Eddington can hear Kira's voice in a very right. fun moment. That's right. Like, who is that?
Who are you talking to?
It's at this point that Bashir is cautioned. He must keep the program going because the thing that the computer did is that they shunted all of the data from the surviving crew people into all these different areas of the station. And one of the primary places for storage is the holosuite.
Yeah. So people from real life are going to be playing characters in this holosuite program. And there's some rules that are established here. Like, they cannot end the program or, like, call for the door or anything. They have to keep playing the game as it was designed. But also, the safeties are off. So death is on the line. And
Ben, I was just thinking... What if the rules were that, like, when Kira shows up, it's actually Kira, it's not her face on a character, and, like, all of the crew people start showing up as themselves, but it becomes totally clear after an amount of time that this is a jack-off program for Bashir, and he has to jack it in front of everyone. Like, all of these computer characters are, like, disrobing and throwing themselves at Bashir, and he can't stop them.
Like, their head, they have control over their head, but their bodies are doing the program.
Oh, I mean, it could be even more innocent than that. Like, they're there as incidental characters, but these computer characters are trying to fuck Bashir, and they've got to watch.
they're just stuck in the room with him?
Yeah, it's so... Like, there are three rules, Bashir. You can't end the program, you can't call for the door, and you can't kick anyone out of your room.
You cannot stop coming.
That's not a punch up, that's a punch it.
So the plot of the game is that the Russian Secret Service has discovered that a bunch of artificial earthquakes have been happening all over the world, and they want to work with MI6 and specifically Bashir on figuring out how to stop it. They realize that a certain geologist has gone missing.
Professor Honeybear.
And there's like a black envelope with a headshot of said geologist, and it's Dax.
Yeah, there's a pace to these revelations that is quickening, right?
Yeah.
You got your Dax as your doctor. You've got O'Brien as the eye patchman.
It's Falcon.
You've got Sisko as the heavy, the end boss.
Dr. Noah.
Another interesting direction to take this premise would have been for Garrick to kind of see an opportunity in this.
Mm.
Like,
how so?
Nothing is stopping Garrick from just going, computer end program, you know? Like, there's a moment where he threatens to do that and Bashir uses fairly serious means to stop him. But, you know, Garrick could like take over the station right now, I feel like.
Yeah, if there was ever a time, this is it.
And computer end program would not be the way to do that, but there's leverage here that he could be exploiting. And he's the kind of character who's shown some willingness to exploit leverage in the past.
He expresses an angle to this situation that I think is really interesting, which is the idea of breaking a couple of eggs to make this omelet. He's like, look.
Real spies have to make hard choices. You want to save Dax? Fine. But you may not have the luxury of saving everyone.
Yeah, he's like, what's it going to take for me to convince you to kill, say, O'Brien?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something that Kira even goes for. Like, he has to wrench the gun out of her hand after they get into a fairly low-key fist fight with a bunch of goons and eye-patched O'Brien.
There's some cross-cutting between the conflicts happening in the program and the effort to fix the problem on the station. And one funny revelation is that the holosuites have been jury-rigged by ROM using, yeah, like, tangled pasta amount of wires.
I loved this. I loved, we've seen what a clean Starfleet spec open panel looks like, and we've seen what they look like on this show, and, you know, giving the props department the brief of like, do that, but ROM did it.
They kind of do this a lot in this series where they open up a panel and reveal wiring, and it's up to you as a viewer to understand if it's good or fucked up.
Yeah, it's cool that there's kind of a visual language there, and like, the second you see this stuff, you know that it is done in a non-regulation way.
Right.
And so what they come up with, like, and there's like a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Eventually, with Odo, Eddington, Quark, and Rom.
Really your A team, right?
Right. It's kind of a disaster effect where it's the config of people at the helm that are really non-ideal for solving this problem. And what they've come up with is that the bodies of the five members of the Orinoco crew are in the holosuite, and that their minds are everywhere else in the station.
Yeah.
So they need to figure out a way to get them back into the transporter when the transporter is repaired, that will re-merge them. And the high-stakes international super spy game that Bashir is playing will have to be run until that point, and he will have to do everything in his power to keep characters from dying and keep himself and Garrick from being killed while the safeties are off.
It also reminded me of the A Fistful of Data's episode in TNG, where you get presented with characters you like acting outside of their character the way Data does. And Michael Dorn was in both of those episodes.
Yeah.
He gets a fun character to play here as Monsieur Duchamp.
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 Ankylosaur.
He does not attempt a French accent.
No. Unfortunate. So the thing is, he's kind of like the go-between for Dr. Noah, who we'll meet in a bit, but they have to convince him that Bashir should be introduced to Dr. Noah, and he introduces himself to Mr. Duchamp as a preeminent geologist and somebody that Dr. Noah should want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like an insult to him that he wasn't invited to this party. And Worf says that the price to get into this party uninvited will be 5 million francs. And Bashir pulls out like a single banknote, and and Worf says, "Where's the rest?" And he says, "I'm about to gamble you for it." That is preposterous.
I mean, he's just a grinder.
You don't gamble. You grind it out.
I guess so, but here's what's preposterous about it. I was just in Senegal, as has been established. It's a country that has a very strong haggling culture. So if you go up to somebody that is selling something, like if you're going to take a taxi, you know, the price that they're going to quote you from, you know, the moment you propose to hire their taxi is going to be vastly higher than what they will actually accept ultimately, which is not like I'm very allergic to this as a strongly conflict averse only child. Like the idea of paying somebody less than they have asked me to pay for something is something I have a very hard time with. But it is how most things get done there, it seems. And
it's why your picture still hangs at the car dealership.
Yep, they love me there. One of my colleagues that I was there with was telling me a story where she was in a market and somebody came up to her with a bunch of like necklaces or trinkets or something and was really pushing hard on her, trying to sell her on buying one of these things, and quoted her a price and then said, "Now you tell me your price and we'll find a way to meet in the middle." And she was like, "I know how haggling works. I don't want this. I would haggle with you if I wanted it, but that's like the premise of haggling is not you convincing me to buy it because I remain unconvinced." And that's, I think, the problem with this "I'm going to gamble you for the $5 million I need to pay you" scene.
Because Duchamp doesn't want him to go to the party, like doesn't want to make the introduction. So why play the game?
Right.
But that's part of the Jack Shack program.
Yeah. And Bashir, you know, like it's an elliptical edit. Like we go check in with the Ferengis that are trying to fix the situation on the outside and come back. And Bashir is like counting his 5 million francs. and Worf is like, "You're really great at Baccarat," which is a preposterous statement because Baccarat is a 100% luck based game.
It's one of the things that intrigues me about it. Yeah. Let's go play some in Star Trek Las Vegas.
I don't play gambles, Adam, remember?
I'll earn us enough to meet Mr. Duchamp.
Do you think that the waitresses will bring you a hoof if you play at a high stakes enough table?
Oh, hell yeah. I bet they don't see too many hoofs in the high stakes area of a casino.
Well, these two tuxedoed men that just walked in are going to change everything about that.
Yeah. And why are their tuxedos wet?
Adam, did this take place in that part of the 90s where cigars became super popular all of a sudden?
Mm. Yeah.
Everybody smokes a stogie in this episode.
Yeah, it's true. It kind of looks like it belongs with Worf / Duchamp. Like, he looks good smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
As an affectation. What Worf / Duchamp is smoking is a blunt.
Right.
with which he uses to knock out Bashir. As
yeah, he's done that move that you see in movies about the 80s where you stick the cigarette into the cocaine before you light it.
Right.
He did that with a cigar.
Yeah.
And he blows it all over them, and they wake up in the mountaintop lair of Dr. Hippocrates Noah.
The mountaintop lair being a ski chalet on Mount Everest at 25,000 feet, Ben.
Yeah.
Which I guess means it has its own oxygen.
Yeah, the house must be pressurized.
Okay.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my living state.
Oh, well,
I don't use the bucket anymore.
The psych in the background has a tape seam on it, Ben. That's the level that we're working with here.
Yeah, it's kind of rickety. I was on Twitter just this morning making an argument for a CBS All Access exclusive HD remaster of DS9. It is episodes like this that make the case against that.
Yeah, it truly does. I don't think you'd ever want to see an HD transfer of this one.
Yeah.
But everything has that 60s sensibility, though. So, like, it's sort of in keeping with what it's trying to present.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I don't think that Bond films looked this crappy, but definitely, like, TV attempts at that vibe looked crappy in the 60s. And I don't know. I wonder about that tape seam, though. Like, it is, like, calling attention to itself in a way that almost seems like satire, but feels like a mistake.
One thing that is most definitely Bond film bad is Dr. Noah's plan. He's got evil bad guy plans. And one of which is a laser-based earthquake triggering system.
Yeah, he's secretly hidden lasers in Star Trek caves all over the world. They're going to drill down into the core and release an amount of magma that will shrink the size of the Earth and cause sea levels to rise so that Mount Everest is the only land that's left above the waves. And he's going to rebuild a super society on that island with all the like smartest scientists that he's gathered around him.
Diabolical.
Visionary.
You know, Waterworld came out in 95, just as this episode did.
Yeah.
This is sort of the Waterworld plan.
Yeah, except for I didn't get the sense that Waterworld was done on purpose.
If Dr. Noah just wanted to drink his own urine, he could do that from the privacy of his Mount Everest ski chalet lair.
Yeah, just go into his chalet's hollow suite, lock the door behind him.
Yeah, turn himself into a dirty, dirty piss boy.
This is a political philosophy that we hear espoused today by that purple guy in those dumb Marvel movies.
Yeah?
Yeah. What is that guy named? Theranos?
Yeah.
No, that's the blood company.
I thought they named their blood company after the bad guy in the Avengers movies.
Oh, maybe cool. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, he does the thing where he ties our hero up at the base of the lasers in the Star Trek caves, and it's revealed that Dax, in the character of the brilliant geologist that Hippocrates Noah has abducted to work on this, is actually on board with this evil, evil plan. And she's like there in the cave making final adjustments as Garrick and Bashir, still in their tuxedos, struggle against their bonds.
Bashir kind of, she's all that's her.
And like, I was like initially really grossed out by this, but then I realized that it's sending up that part of James Bond that he's so just like sexually magnetic that he's able to trick an evil woman into doing something for him, which is a very like James Bond like gross 60s idea. It also like her character is a sociopath, right? Like she's there like doing work while two people who are about to get engulfed in magma are just chained up.
I'd give you both some privacy if I could.
And she's like that character is fine with that, but also open to the idea of like taking down her hair and taking off her glasses to look more sexy for one of them.
It's instructive about Bashir's character in that way, but also in the video game way, because I don't know if you're like this, but I like to play video games at the hardest level that I can while still keeping it fun.
Right.
Like sometimes you don't turn it all the way up because it's just no fun. It's so hard.
Yeah.
It's weird that Bashir chooses easy mode for his video game.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad look.
Yeah. But I mean, of all the bad looks that Bashir has had, this might be the least bad.
Yeah. A lot of volumes in that series about Bashir, right?
Yeah. But anyways, she's so overcome by his sexual magnetism that that she palms him the key to his handcuffs while laying one on him. And it's really funny, like the way she like takes her hand out of her lab coat and like reaches down while she's kissing him really looks like she's rubbing on his dick, you know?
Yeah.
But in fact, she's palming the key to him.
Oh, she's palming the key. All right.
And then we get a chase scene through the Star Trek caves where, you know, boulders are falling from the ceiling and the laser's going off. Doesn't seem like this laser is linked to all the other lasers, right?
No, they don't appear to be firing simultaneously.
And this is where the argument takes place, right?
There comes a time when the odds are against you, and the only reasonable course of action is to quit!
Everything is going to be in jeopardy if you don't kill a couple of these characters or, like, turn the thing off. Like, Garak is not willing to risk his own life for saving these other people and is on the precipice of calling for the door or ending the program, a move that will potentially end their lives when Bashir uses his little mini, spy gun to shoot Garak in the neck.
It reminded me a lot of when Worf tried to kill Kor a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
In the last episode.
Same cave.
There was just one aspect to Garrick's argument here that was missing, which was the dying in a dumb way argument. Like, throughout the episode, he kind of smirks his way through what a weird interest Bashir has in this whole thing.
Right.
And he's making the case here that, like, look, they need to cut their losses, save the two lives that they can save, and get back to the station. But he never mentions how bad he would feel to die in such a dumb way, like tied to a laser beam or drowned in lava.
Yeah.
Because he is a serious military spy hero person. Like, it's almost like what Bashir wants to become in this program is what Garak actually is.
Right. And that's, I mean, that they hang a lantern on that, right? Like, Garak gets accused of taking exception to the way Bashir plays this game because it is something he has a professional interest in.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting, the idea of, like, you know, not wanting the reason of your death to be embarrassing at your funeral or whatever.
Yeah. You don't want to get that Michael Hutchence situation, if you can help it. You want to be remembered for the great work you did, not the weird sexual way that you died.
I always think of the David Carradine for that.
Yeah. Yeah, so. He went out that way too. Great body of work, but what do you remember? It's too bad.
A guy I know died of what was told, everybody was told was a heart attack a couple of years ago. And he was like very young and it just seemed like so crazy. And I recently heard a rumor that I don't know if I should believe or not, but that it was a drug overdose actually. Mm. And it is very hard for me not to think about that while we're having this conversation because the reaction I had to it was like, if it was a drug overdose, it's such a disservice to everyone who knew him to cover that up.
Yeah.
Because a drug overdose is basically the like potential end of a disease and like a disease that's like has a social aspect to it. And like the secrecy around it is part of why it's potentially lethal. And like, I can really understand a family not necessarily wanting imagining that there will be some kind of shame associated with that information becoming public. But I also think that like it's like one of those things that perpetuates like the social taboos surrounding addiction that make it so dangerous.
It feels a little like organ donation. Like, I think there's a chance to do good there that you miss by keeping it to yourself.
Right. I think that, like, even if they don't necessarily say it out loud, it does feel like it's in Andrew Robinson's performance here. Like, I really liked the way he did this episode. It, you know, despite my complaint that, like, Garrick might have had a more sinister approach to a dilemma like this and, like, tried to exploit it for something, like, I think that the character of Garrick in this is really good and on point in how strongly he disagrees with the way Bashir is conducting the game.
I think there's a difficulty setting to the game that we're never made to believe is any harder than easy.
Yeah.
That takes me out of it. Because if we knew that it was on easy mode the whole time, we would be on Bashir's side hard. But because the aspect of its difficulty is ambiguous, there are times in this episode when I'm on Garrick's side.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know how easy of a time Bashir will have short-circuiting Noah's plan and ending the game like that. No one could know that except Bashir. And that Bashir never says at any point what his plan will be. I don't know.
Well, he's just embarrassing. He's just embarrassed that when he first installed the game disc, you know, and it asked him to pick what mode he was going to play on, he picked easy, you know? You don't.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I could totally understand being a little bit embarrassed about.
Yeah. Hard mode is jacking it in front of Noah at the end in order to win. He's going to raise the sea level with his own cum.
Morn.
Dude, sweet.
Morn.
You here, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
They make it back to the single room of the pressurized Himalaya lair.
Himalaya.
And they've got to, like, kill two more minutes to give Rom enough time to like turn the screw that's going to rematerialize the crew. They've like wired the station into the Defiant because the Defiant has a working transporter pad still, and they're going to shunt all of the information in the holosuite and all of the information in the Deep Space Nine main computer into the pattern buffers on the Defiant. They've totally jury-rigged this thing. Bashir's got to kill some time, though. So the way he decides to do that is by agreeing hard with the evil villain monologue that Hippocrates Noah is doing about the important work of killing everybody on Earth in order to create a super society.
You're absolutely right.
About what?
Everything.
So much so that he goes over to the computer panel and hits the button.
And Hippocrates Noah explodes like a fembot in the Austin Powers movies.
I thought this was so fun. Like, the idea of a villain, like, doing something this evil on this scale and then being, like, a little disappointed when it actually happens.
Yeah.
Oh, like, it was more just for the game of having you come stop me, really.
I was hoping that they cut over to the psych and you could see, like, a Price is Right quality effect of like a piece of blue velvet rising to cover up the mountains in the background.
It would have been fun to have like hearing like some kind of structural pops and squeaks as the house that is normally used to being in very low pressure suddenly surrounded by normal pressure, you know, a normal amount of air pressure.
So the plan works in both worlds.
Yeah.
Data transfer complete. I am reestablishing computer control over the station.
They're able to beam the crew away, and Bashir and Garrick can leave, but things aren't great with them. Because Bashir shot Garrick not long ago.
I mean, he kind of respect Nux Bashir for standing in his truth in that way.
Yeah, the game's over, but they remain friends.
Yeah, and they're gonna get back into the swing of being buddies that actually meet up for lunch and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is a habit they seem to have gotten out of lately. So that's good. That's nice. Did you like the episode, Adam?
I'm trying to be better at watching and enjoying and appreciating these episodes. It made me think a lot about, like, Because I have
Does
a hard time.
Does Deep Space Nine want you to make you want to be a better man, Adam?
I have a hard time with mixing my silly in with my sci-fi.
Have you seen Star Trek before?
Well, that's the thing. There's a difference between a self-aware version of silly that you get in a Our Man Bashir or Little Green Men, and and a type of silly that is retroactively silly, which is what you'd get if you watch original series Star Trek in the right mood, you know?
Like, yeah.
It doesn't age very well, but I'm coming around to the idea of not just reflexively disliking episodes like these. I think there is room for them. I think it is odd, like in the way that we talk about sequencing series, like that this is so in such close proximity to the Little Green Men episode. It's sort of, I'm getting the bends a little bit in season four because there's more of this than I was expecting.
Right.
It makes me wonder if we're going to go really dark soon.
As a trilogy, Little Green Men, The Sword of Kaelas, and Our Man Bashir are really light, low-stakes episodes.
Yeah.
That it's interesting that they all happen back-to-back.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what's coming, for sure. But I did like it. I did like it because I'm working on myself, Ben. I'm working on myself and doing the work that it takes to enjoy an episode like this.
That's
about you?
That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
All right. Want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
I do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Mirror Universe Matt. It is for Mirror Universe Ben and Adam.
Oh, hold on. Let me go get my mustachioed counterpart.
The message goes like this. Thanks for the web.
I like how your Mirror Universe counterpart doesn't have a goatee, but he strokes his chin as though he does.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's a different universe, but you just genetically aren't that different, right?
Thanks for the web's best Lord of the Rings podcast. From your Shelob impression to your Boromir has IBS bits, you always crack me up. Excited for Hobbit once you finish Return of the King. From this friend of Tom Bombadil, thanks for all you do. Give me 5 stars on my Zune. Just hope this ion storm doesn't stop this message from getting to you. Did I pronounce all of those names correctly, Ben?
Okay. I think you did pretty good.
All right.
I wasn't sure that what that first thing was. Voice of what?
Your Shelob impression.
Shelob impression.
Like Tony Shelob from from Monk?
Yeah. I think we definitely would have a Lord of the Rings podcast if we lived in the Mirror Universe. It's nice bit of reassurance that we don't necessarily live in the Mirror Universe.
There's enough content there.
Adam, our second Priority One message here is from Juliet Jones, a.k.a. A Bunch of Nicks, and is for the warm-honeyed bosom, but especially Joe.
Hmm.
Obligatory binturong. What a year 2018 was. January pod intro and binge to August Obsidian Order Force ad. Thank you for the friendship and love. You are my family now. Frankly, y'all saved my gluteus maximus. Joe, thank you for Denver and GGK. I love you. See you soon. Meter melon forever. Pork chop sandwiches. Love always, Juliet.
Wow.
Very sweet.
What Greatest Gen has combined, let no one ever tear apart.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, we could go away now and there would just be a bunch of awesome friends out there.
Yeah. Think about it all the time.
Be a cool legacy.
Yeah, that legacy cemented. Ben, it's done.
We did it.
As long as we don't fuck it up by saying something dumb.
Well, if you'd like to put dumb words in our mouths, you could go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where a personal message is $100 and a commercial message is $200. And that was not a challenge to make us say something problematic. we do occasionally ask people to edit their P1s. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, we didn't talk a lot about Anastasia Kamananov, as played by Nana Visitor in this ep, but there's one moment that I thought was just the best. So she's like slinking on the round bed of Dr. Bashir's, and as she's talking to him, she reaches behind her head and pulls out a folder from under the bed without looking at it. Like she does this physical bit of acting that is so subtle and fast, and then makes with the folder and gives it to Bashir afterwards. That is amazing. I laughed and laughed when I watched this. I watched it a couple of times. I wondered how many times they had to do it, because like she's reaching blind into an area behind her to grab this folder. She never flinches for a second. She grabs it on the first grab and then makes with it like it's the most natural thing in the world. I just love that moment.
Very fun.
What about you?
My drunk Shimoda is the guy who is able to be knocked out by a piece of cork after having been flung through a glass window. I love the idea that he was like 99.95 of the way toward being KO'd. And it's just it's the straw that broke the camel's back. A little like 1 ounce of aerated wood did it.
Knocked him over with a feather.
Yeah.
Gotta get that cold press lock. Get that
cold press lock.
Am I right?
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation where you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Gotta get that gold press. Get that gold press. Platinum.
Well, what do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
Next episode is Season 4, Episode 10, Homefront, Part 1. Evidence that changelings are targeting Earth sends Sisko back to his home planet, where he and Odo must prevent or prepare for war with the Dominion.
There's the pivot.
There is the pivot that we speculated may be coming.
Yeah.
Mere moments ago.
It's three lights and a heavy.
Yeah.
That's
and a couple of
doing.
Heavies, probably.
So, return to Earth.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder where on Earth? Probably Paris.
They go to Sisko's Creole restaurant. They're like, something tastes funky about this jambalaya.
I've never seen a crawfish etouffee gold before.
What? It's just all food based.
Yeah, you just see somebody in a security uniform taking the A out of the window and putting a C in.
We can only hope, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if we're gonna watch this in a particular way. At this moment, we're on square 97 of the game of buttholes, Will of the Prophets.
Gach.biz/game.
Just one ahead is a space butthole that drops us down into an nth degree episode, and tantalizingly close, three squares ahead, is the Power Hour episode, Ben. So what do we do if we roll through the end? Do we have to land on that?
Unknown.
Or do we start
I don't know
over?
How this thing is coded, so it could All be... Right. It could
Let's
be
see
that,
what happens.
It could be that it forces us to Power Hour. I don't know.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Anything could happen. I'm rolling to find out.
Yeah.
And I rolled a 3 exactly. 3 exactly puts us on the Power Hour. Is this not a very serious episode?
This is going to be intense. A return to beer for a man who has really not drank much beer in the last few months.
Well, we will endeavor to give this episode the serious talk that it perhaps deserves, but the sort of talk that comes from two drunk people, and that's you and me, Ben.
The sick shit about this is one of us is also going to have to do a Power Hour around a bet we made about some characters on Star Trek Discovery.
A bet that I am looking great as far as my chances of winning are concerned.
The people listening probably know which way that bet goes before we do, because we're recording this before the final episode of Star Trek Discovery comes out.
All right.
Fuck.
Well, that'll be the next episode.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Big.
Yeah.
All right. We've got some housekeeping, though. We got to thank all of the people that make this show possible, especially the Friends of DeSoto, who have gone to MaximumFun.org/donate and chosen to support the production of this show on a monthly basis with their hard-earned ducats. Thank you.
That monthly support really helps. So does the support we get from Priority One Messages.
Yeah. And so does the support we get from people who leave a nice rating or review for our show on their podcatcher. If you recommend the show to a friend or family member or colleague or whatever, all of that is hugely, hugely appreciated.
Yeah, that's true.
We also should thank Dark Materia, who made the Picard song and let us use it as our theme music, and Adam Ragusea, who has taken the inspiration of that and run with it for all of the other original music you hear on the program.
Adam Ragusea, now a wildly popular video food blogger on YouTube. You should go check out his work. It's really great.
Please check his stuff out. What can we? Is there like an easy link that we can?
I mean, if you search YouTube and Adam Ragusea, I mean, he's gonna come right up.
Yeah.
102,000 subscribers.
Wow.
To his feed, he has just rocketed up the charts.
That's amazing. He deserves it.
He really does. He makes great video.
His steak video has been my preferred steak recipe since I watched it. Like, well, I think he put that up more than a year ago. But
yeah,
I think he just kind of caught fire because somebody posted one of his videos to Reddit and people really liked it. And
yeah.
So check that out. We should thank Bill Tilly, who makes really hilarious trading cards about every episode of this show, puts them up on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen, and JJ Lendl, who's been making really cool portfolio print style movie posters of every episode of Deep Space Nine as we review them and putting them up the Sunday before we drop our episode about it.
A treat and a joy every week.
Yeah, indeed.
Is that it?
I think that does it, Adam.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of The Greatest Generation. We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which will be barely holding it together. If past power hours have been any indication,
I think there's a strong chance that it will not hold it together.
Interesting that we evoke the name John Gabris on this episode, and then we're doing a power hour ep. The very next one. That's what happens, right?
Case could be made that we just stole that idea from him.
Right.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.